All right, the NBA season right around the corner, opening night on Tuesday. The Raptors are at home on Wednesday night. It'll be a packed building up here at Scotiabank, and lots of news out there in the NBA. Like always, here he is from ESPN, one of our favorites, Brian Windhorst, back on the show. How you doing, Brian?
I'm well, thank you.
So we're getting close, obviously, Tuesday night, and there's still a lot lurking in the air in terms of what could happen with certain players. We'll begin with Ben Simmons and Philly and this recent report where some teammates in Philly think maybe he was trying to get out of Game 7 against Atlanta. No one knew he was showing up. All of a sudden, he's outside the door. Where do things currently stand with Simmons, the Sixers, and his eventual exit out of Philly?
I mean, regardless of where you are on that, if you watched that series where his play in the fourth quarter of the games in that series, he was almost like a hole on the court. You know, that play really speaks more to it than anything else, the way he handled that. So, you know, it's not, you know, I know that detail is interesting, but, you know, I'm a guy who believes in actions. You know, you tell me what you do with your, who you are with your actions. And I saw a lot about Ben in that whole series, not just in Game 7. You know, he is unvaccinated. And so him being unvaccinated, or I shouldn't say he's on, he's not fully vaccinated, at least by NBA standards. So that meant that this week, instead of reporting on Monday, passing one COVID test and being able to join his team for workouts Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then flying to Detroit and being, you know, either available to play tonight or at least on the bench with his team tonight, he didn't clear health and safety protocols until today. They're not going to practice tomorrow, so that means his first practice with the team is not going to be until Sunday with their opener on Wednesday. So the reality is that he wasn't really with his team this week either, and there's still a mystery about, you know, how he's going to play this and everything like that. In my mind, the big question with Ben now is, what is he going to do in this next step in this poker game? Because I know that all eyes are going to be on how do his teammates react when he shows up with the team. And that is important, but that's really a 1 or 2 day reality. And then, of course, everybody with their schadenfreude is going to be there on Friday, and they're going to be like, watch the Philly fans boo him at home. And that will happen, and it will be a story, and we'll all talk about it. But eventually that's going to pass. He's got to be a player for the 76ers. And to me, what I'm looking for is he going to be Ben Simmons? Is he going to say that he doesn't, you know, he's with the team but doesn't really want to play, which I don't think he'll do, but is on the board. And then, or three, is he going to just sort of play half speed and, you know, become a problem and make the team even more want to trade him? That, to me, is going to be the next stage of this game.
He can't be stupid and think that people in Philadelphia or his teammates, that story coming out about him trying to duck out of Game 7 using COVID protocols as an excuse, I mean, that doesn't fly with guys that play 3-on-3 hoops on the weekend, let alone a professional basketball team in Philly. Do you not agree, Brian?
Again, it's an interesting detail, but if you watched how he played in that series, he effectively was doing that anyway.
So, I get it, but...
You know, I mean, like, I understand, I mean, it is a piece of red meat, and everybody's going to be like, oh, and they're going to swarm to that, but this entire thing is a much wider problem than just a holdout or that detail, if it's true.
What about Kyrie? Is this guy ever going to play basketball again? It seems like Kevin Durant's had enough of talking about it. Where does this stand? Like, does this guy, things ever go back to normal for him, and he's just a great player on that team trying to help them win a championship?
You know, Kyrie, you know, the thing about it is when you pay attention to words with Kyrie, it's very tedious. And I really would advise people, and I know it won't work, but I would advise people to judge Kyrie by his actions. I would pretty much ignore what he says. Because he's all over the place. And he's been all over the place for years, guys. This just happens to be a very high profile all over the place. And so some of his actions away from the court are, you know, admirable. But a lot of the stuff that he says is just, you know, baddie. And so you know, I have no idea what he's going to do. I don't think anybody with the Nets has any idea what he's going to do. And basically the Nets are saying, when you get vaccinated, let us know. We'll invite you back to the team. Otherwise, good luck to you. And I totally get it. And, guys, if we're going to be 100% honest here, Kyrie has already kind of done what he can do for the Nets. He convinced Kevin Durant to join up with him and come to Brooklyn. I can't believe that he did, but he did. Kyrie has good relationships with a lot of NBA stars, and I remain baffled as to how he does. But he obviously can do it. And he got Kevin Durant to choose him over a bunch of other players he could have teamed up with, in addition to just staying put, and in him to do it in Brooklyn. I mean, that to me makes him one of the most successful Nets in the history of the organization. Then Durant gets Harden. Harden forces his way to play with Durant. He didn't go there to play with Kyrie. He went there to play with Durant. And then Durant this offseason signs a giant extension with no opt-out, marrying himself to the franchise long-term. With all due respect, maybe Kyrie has done the best he could ever do for the Nets by just putting them in that position. And going forward, if he's going to be a distraction, maybe they should just say goodbye to him and say thank you for everything that you've done in getting us Durant and Harden. We're going to try to win it without you.
With Brian Windhorst, well, I think that may very well be the case, but it changes the complexion of the projection and where we see this going, because it's always been, we live in this world now where it's big three this, big three that, and it's been KD, Harden, and Kyrie. So if we do eliminate Kyrie Irving from the situation and he doesn't play again for the Brooklyn Nets, are the Nets good enough to compete? Like, they'll be a playoff team, clearly. They'll be a top three or four team in the East, but can they win a title with KD and Harden and then whatever else is left?
I know why you're asking that question, and it's a valid question, because when the three of them played together last year, they were awesome. They actually, as a team, had the highest offensive rating in NBA history, the Nets did. And when the three of them were out there together, they were pretty much unstoppable. And so, yeah, it's real. But, guys, Kyrie has not finished three of the last five seasons. And if he doesn't ever come of this season, it'll mean he hasn't finished four of the last six. So, again, let's look at his actions. His actions say that whether it's him talking or him playing, he's not reliable to be counted on. So, yeah, they would be better with Kyrie, but how can I look at the data and say that I can expect Kyrie to be there whether he's vaccinated or not?
Brian, what are you expecting to see out of L.A. this year? Somebody tweeted out a pic of their five guys that are on the floor, and it looks amazing when you see Melo with LeBron and Westbrook. It's like... But is there too much age there? Is LeBron still have it? Can this team win a championship? I just found the picture fascinating to see them all on the floor together. And there's obviously the superstar power there. But can they put it together on the floor and win?
Yeah, I'm not worried about their age. I know that's what everybody's paying attention to. And I think it's reasonable to worry about that. But I'm worried about their fit. I mean, for pretty much the last 15 years, the teams that LeBron has been on have searched high and low for players who can spread the floor and shoot and don't have to dominate the basketball, but can sort of be supporting ball handlers. If you look at the guards that LeBron has won titles with, they were guys who could score a little bit, shoot a little bit, and handle the basketball. And I'm talking about Mario Chalmers, too. Like, you can joke about Mario Chalmers all you want. Mario Chalmers was an ideal backcourt mate for LeBron. Mario Chalmers, in my view, is a better backcourt made for LeBron than Russell Westbrook is. I mean, Mo Williams, again, you can make fun of Mo Williams for the rest of the day, and you would be right about it. LeBron won 60 games twice with Mo Williams as his backcourt mate. And then, whoa, boy, you start putting him alongside Kyrie Irving. Now you're talking about pretty greatness, right? Well, they're going the exact opposite direction now with this. And so what I would say with the Lakers is I would advise people not to judge them until at least Christmas or New Year's, depending on health, because I'm expecting them to get off to a slow start. You know, if you look at the last two teams Westbrook was on, when he got traded to Houston, he got traded to Washington, both those teams got off to really bad starts. LeBron, when he's, you know, integrated with new star guard teammates, Dwayne Wade, Kyrie Irving, both struggled out of the gates in both of those situations, and they got a bunch of injuries. I think they got four guys who are out right now, including two guys who've had surgery. So I mean, I got to see how they put stuff together, you know, in the first 2 months of the season. It's a lot to be worried about, but, you know, LeBron has overcome and put together teams year over year. So it'd be foolish to rule them out, but I'm not excited about them.
With Brian Windhorst, well, in terms of where the Raptors are going to shake out as we move back to the Eastern Conference, they're going young. You know, they're going to wait for Siakam to return. Who knows when he'll be back at 100%. Scottie Barnes looked great through camp. Precious Achiuwa's looked pretty good through camp. But, you know, this is a new leaf. Kyle's gone. Kyle's been the staple of this team for a long, long time. He's represented the heartbeat of this team, and we know where he is now, and he's no longer in Toronto. I think everyone in the league will be looking past the Raptors, you know, and they have to prove that they can do enough to stay in the hunt. Where do you stand on their chances of just competing throughout the season and staying in that playoff chase?
Well, from what I hear, Siakam looks really good in workouts and with the team. And I'm telling you, I can already see this is going to be – I know that they said he's not going to be back for a while, but I can already – smell that, you know, especially if they don't get off to a blazing start, there's going to be a push from Siakam himself and some people to get him back out there, because I hear he looks really good. But, you know, the doctors are always really cautious, and you don't want to press that kind of injury because you're worried about re-injuring and all that stuff. So I'm watching that. I think the Raptors are just good enough to be in a difficult spot. You know, yes, they have youth, and you're going to feel that youth, both positive and negative. But when you have experienced guards in the NBA, you have a chance to win. The way that you can guarantee losing in the NBA is to have young guards. So if you have young guards, you're going to lose. The Raptors have experienced guards. You know, Fred VanVleet and Goran Dragic are really experienced guards. There's going to be games where they could go either way, and because those dudes really know how to play, they're going to just guide them home to victory. And so my feel on them is they're going to win enough. They're going to be a potent team every night. They're going to have a chance to win a lot of games, and they're going to lose a lot of games close because they're just good enough to be up in every single game. And they're going to win just enough where they're going to be stuck at midseason saying, what should we do? Should we trade Dragic? Should we trade Fred VanVleet? Should we trade Siakam and go younger? That's what I predict for them. But that said, you know, Nick Nurse is a real asset. And Nick Nurse tends to get more out of his players than, you know, over the course of his career, other places, he tends to get more out of the team. I would never have predicted them to be a two seed 2 years ago, and Nick Nurse is a big part of that. So maybe they'll surprise me, and it won't be a question. Maybe they'll be in fifth place come February. But what I'm afraid for them is that they're in eighth place, 2 games out of 10th, 2 games out of 6th in February, and you're sitting on the fence not knowing what to do again.
Yeah, I think they're banking on being home, factoring into all of this as well, which, yeah. I mean, they dealt with hurdles that no other team had to in the NBA last year, but that's only going to take you so far. The idea of potentially hearing the names VanVleet and Siakam at the deadline would go against what Bobby Webster and Masai have been pushing for the better part of 6 months, you know, that they're committed to Siakam, VanVleet, Anunoby, and now I think Barnes, as a core group that they think can turn things around in the next 2 or 3 years. Do you think that's just a front, or do you think that could change if things go south?
I think they got to wait and see. But if you look at how they're progressing their team, there's a line of demarcation. There's veteran players and there's young players. And the veteran players aren't good enough to be a contender, I don't think. And the young players are probably not going to result in a lot of wins if you play them a lot and build a team around them. So, like I said, maybe Nick gets them together and maybe playing at home works. And like I said, maybe they're in fifth place in February. But I think they're probably going to be around eighth, and it's going to be some decisions to be made because those players are really desirable. So, you know, this is a classic situation that teams go into in their life cycles as contenders. The Raptors were at the top, and they've come around. The two guys who led them to a championship are gone. They're in a retrofit mode, but they haven't gone full rebuild, and they're skating on the edge. And, you know, many teams who have been at this spot realize they've got to go full rebuild. So we'll see. Masai has shown he knows how to build a winning team. I'll yield to what he does. But if you're looking at it objectively, you're looking at the Raptors, who are a little bit stuck in the middle right now.
Great stuff as always, Brian. Enjoy the opening of the season. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
Have a good weekend.
There's Brian Windhorst of ESPN.